You're listening to Valley Edition. I'm Joe Moore. How can we balance environmental issues and the economy? Agriculture and water? Those are just some of the questions asked in a new book by Kerman farmer Paul Betancourt. It's called 10 Reasons, Finding Balance on Environmental Issues. Paul joins us today. Welcome.
Good morning.
What prompted you to write this book?
Well, for years I've been farming for 30 years, heavily involved with Farm Bureau for 20 years. You know, I can do everything right on the farm and still get clobbered with regulations and water issues and things that are off the farm. And have lobbied in Washington and Sacramento. I spent 3 years on the Regional Water Quality Control Board as an appointee of Governor Schwarzenegger. And just been heavily involved in the issue. And one of the unique things is not growing up on the farm is I have the perspective, growing up in the city in Southern California and seeing how people look at the environment and also seeing how my neighbors see the environment. And trying to find a balance there instead of the either-or we tend to end up with in environmental issues.
Do you think that's a problem in the fact that the way the media or just the public in general sticks people in different camps or saying it's always farmers versus environmentalists and farmers are against the environment and environmentalists are against farmers? Or are those stereotypes that maybe are in reality a little more nuanced?
Well, I think that's true. But it's also, one of the virtues of modern life is people don't have to go through farming themselves. But one of the downsides of that is most consumers are very distant from their food supply. And even here in the Valley, there's a lot of people that don't even know a farmer. And that distance between the farm and the home, there's the ability to create fear and misunderstanding. And one of my goals being involved in Farm Bureau writing is to kind of reconnect people with their food.
Jim Costa wrote the foreword to this book. Mm-hmm. In some circles in the agriculture community, he's a pariah. You drive around and see the cotton trailers with the various signs. He doesn't seem to be too popular with a certain segment of the agriculture community. Talk about having him write the foreword.
Yeah, I've even had people suggest I take that out, and I'm not going to do it. Jim's been a water warrior over the years. He's done a lot for the Valley on water issues. And, in the foreword there, he mentions, being in the Oval Office, explaining to President Obama that farmers are price takers, not price makers, and that each time they pile a regulation on, the farmers just got to take it. And, the president had not heard that message. And we need somebody like Congressman Costa in there, going to bat for us.
You had political ambitions at one point. You ran for state assembly, what was it, about 8 years ago?
10 years ago.
10 years ago. Why? Time flies.
We must have been having fun.
Is that still something that you think about at some point in the future? Or sometimes people write books before they run for office.
Yeah. I consider myself a recovering politician. I haven't asked anybody for money lately. But still very involved. I teach Constitution at University of Phoenix. I teach an American government class at Madera Center Community College. We have an amazing system that invites our participation even if we're not elected officials. And I think it's important that people participate in government.
You talk about these 10 reasons. We don't have time to go into all of them, but I'd like to talk about a few of them. Solutions. You look to the future and what can we do to try to make the future a little stronger for both the farmer and for the public and the environment as well.
Well, one of my issues is I'm critical of the environmental movement for not offering solutions, the opening paragraph. I'll start believing environmentalists when they start offering solutions. What I usually see is a presentation of a problem. They jump up and down and tell us to stop. For example, they'll tell us how bad overpopulation is, then tell us to stop it. What kind of solution is that? It would be nice if their solutions made sense. One suggestion they had was dust on dirt roads in our area was to water the dirt roads every day. Do you know how many miles of dirt roads there are in Fresno County? Do you know how much water that would take? Do you know how many of those roads have no traffic at all during the day? That wasn't much of a solution. And it's one of my criticisms of the environmental movement. They need to offer reasonable solutions. I actually had a professor at Fresno State. He says, that's not our job. He considered himself a radical environmentalist. And he'd bring up problems. He says, that's not our job to offer solutions. The business community is innovative. They'll figure it out. And you know, I teach critical thinking, and that's not a very good problem-solving method.
Speaking of solutions, let's take a look at some of the issues right now. The big one that's out there is the Bay Delta Conservation Plan and this plan for two massive tunnels, a multi-billion dollar project that the governor and folks in Sacramento are looking at implementing to help bring water supplies from the Sacramento-San Joaquin Delta through that environmentally sensitive area to Southern California and the Valley. One of the biggest challenges beyond the technical side, beyond the cost side, this is not just an issue that pits environmentalists versus farmers. This is an issue that pits farmers versus farmers. North of the Delta, south of the Delta, it's a classic California water war and the environmental issue that's thrown into the mix. What type of solution do you think is realistic here, cost-effective, and can help both those who provide jobs, make a living growing food, and also protect a sensitive ecosystem?
There is no doubt there are biological problems in the Delta. It's pelagic organism decline. But there's also, I raise the question, are we trying to defend an artificial system? The deltas have been an artificial system for over a century once they started building up the islands. But, you know, that just kind of begs the question. And your question is, how do we do it and how do we do it affordably? Farmers don't agree. We're not very well organized. You get five of us together and there'll be 10 different opinions. And the Northern California farmers are worried that their water supply is going to be hurt by putting in this conveyance system. That's something we need to consider. The real root of it is, you know, we're kind of idiots when it comes to water systems. California has wet years and California has dry years. And we don't capture the water in the wet years and save it for the dry years. And until we get that part of the equation taken care of, we're going to have problems. I've looked at the water records back at least to the 1860s. And in every 20-year period, there's a three-year drought. We've just got to plan for it. And we haven't gotten there yet.
It seems like we may be in one of those periods right now. What's it like on the farm right now?
The droughts are usually 2 and 3 years. We've had two dry. I'm hoping this one's a 2 year and it starts raining this winter, because if it doesn't rain this winter, it's going to get very lonely out on the farm next summer.
How are your water allocations this year and what are you looking at
for next year? We're at 20%, we finished paying off the ranch a few years ago, and I immediately turned around, borrowed $200,000 to stick a hole in the ground. At least I've got water. The quality is not very good. It's really only an emergency system, but it gets me through years like this when I've only got a 20% allotment.
What does that mean when you have a 20% allotment versus a – I mean, I know what that means in terms of the water you have contracted to buy, but what does it mean in real terms as far as, okay, I only have 20% of the water I would normally have. I'm going to farm differently. I'm going to plant different crops. I'm going to fallow a certain field.
Well, at 20-25% with the well, I can farm my entire place. But there's a lot of open ground on the west side, and there's guys on the west side now saying – if water's tight next year, they're not going to plant any row crops. No cotton, no tomatoes, no onions. And they're going to put all their water into keeping their almond trees alive. So if water's tight again next summer, there's going to be a huge shift in production, and a lot of row crops will be cut back.
We're talking with Kerman farmer Paul Betancourt. He's the author of a new book called 10 Reasons, Finding Balance on Environmental Issues. It's an interesting look at the complex relationships in California between agriculture and the environment, looking to another issue that is certainly controversial when it comes to agriculture here in the Valley, and that's high-speed rail. many farmers are very concerned about what this means for their future to viably farm their land. It'll have the rails, because this is high speed. This can't turn on a dime. It has to take these broad swaths of arcs of railway, and that's going to divide many parcels in odd ways. The rail authority has talked about trying to mitigate that. But this isn't the first time that a major infrastructure project has cut through valley farmland. We've seen it with freeways. We've seen it with the projects of the State Water Project. Are we at a point right now in the progress of high-speed rail where the agriculture community is coming to terms with it? I know there's still lawsuits. I know that's still a very hot issue. But what do you feel the temperature of the agriculture community is right now in regards to high-speed rail?
Great question. There, folks are still grumpy about it. There's no two ways about it. And let's be clear, I use the train. We stopped going to visit my family. They live in Southern California. We stopped going by driving ourselves 10 years ago. And we take the train, and I'd much rather it be a 2 or 3 hour trip than an 8 hour trip. But really, for me, the root problem is we fight and scrap and beg and use political capital to get a $3 billion water project. It gets larded into an $11 billion water bond. And last year, the same week that they punt the water bond, they sign up for a $68 billion high-speed rail issue. That water bond will help everybody in California, and it's a fraction of the cost. High-speed rail is part of our future, but it'll only help a small portion of the people right now. And I think we got our priorities mixed up as a state. We need to get these water projects in, get a reliable water supply. That will develop not only the agricultural economy, but the rest of the economy of the Central Valley. Then we can look at things like high-speed rail.
You close your book with a section called Finding Balance, and mm-hmm. I go back to the cover of the book, actually, and you have I assume this is your footwear. On the left side of the photo, you see Birkenstocks, and on the right, some cowboy boots, well-worn. Number one, I assume those are yours?
Yes.
How do you, number one, see yourself in that picture of finding balance, and then how do you think we can best find balance in the state and have a strong, healthy environment, and also a strong and healthy ag economy?
A friend of mine says I'm the only person she knows that can wear Birkenstocks and cowboy boots. So that's how that ended up on the cover. Because of my life experience, I can straddle both sides of the fence better than many people can. So that's how the cover ended up there. In terms of summary finding balance, it's first off, either or, as usual, a logical fallacy. And people will tell you we either, run the economy and screw the environment, or we, protect the environment and let businessmen settle where they want. That's not it. We need a healthy economy and a healthy environment. And we have to find solutions that develop that. There's no turning back. We like modern life. And there's an environmental cost to modern life, so we need to figure out solutions without trying to go back to the Stone Age. One of the things I bring up in that last chapter is essentially we've got a social contract. There's a demand on farmers to accept the cost of growing in more environmentally sound ways, careful with the water, careful with the pesticides, better wages for the workers. And there's an implied social contract there. We'll do that. But then we're asking you to buy food from us instead of buying it from somebody else because it's cheaper. And it's an implied social contract, and it gets broken a lot of times. My last year as Farm Bureau president, I was shocked by the number of politicians, journalists, academics, and regulators that said, well, if you can't comply, we'll just import our food. And that's a ridiculous solution. We need to make this work in California. And so those are the kind of things when I'm looking at solutions. I take at the end of the book and take Albert Schweitzer's Reverence for Life and apply that. Let's make that our environmental ethic. Let's respect and value life and learn how to balance a healthy environment and a healthy economy.
We've been talking with Kerman farmer Paul Betancourt. His new book is titled 10 Reasons Finding Balance on Environmental Issues. Paul, it's available in bookstores both online and also locally?
Yep. It's here at the local Barnes & Nobles. We're trying to get it in a couple other stores. It's available from Zulon Press, who published it, also Amazon.com and BarnesandNobles.com.
And the book is also available at a book barn in Old Town Clovis. He'll be having a signing there September 14th. Paul, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for the opportunity.